We're almost good. We're kind of good. All right. City Council will come back in session for continuation of our hearing. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance item number 600?
Improved land use regulations and procedures related to recreational fields as part of the Schools and Parks Conditional Use Code Refinement Project.
Deborah?
Good afternoon. I'm Deborah Stein with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And again, I am joined by my colleagues Brett Horner from Parks and Recreation and Douglas Hardy from Bureau of Development Services, and they'll help me answer any questions that might come up about code. So we were here last week, and through the testimony and through your own discussion, there were a number of things that you identified that you wanted us to come back with some clarifications. And so it was very helpful to hear those arise through that discussion. So what I'd like to do is provide you an explanation of a couple things that you asked for clarification about. And then I want to follow that with a new memo that I'll pass out that takes some of the amendments we had put in front of you on April 22nd that were contained in a few different memos. There was an April 6th memo, an April 21st memo. We sent out another one yesterday. We've tried to consolidate all of that into one so that we can clearly walk through some of the changes that staff is proposing that you consider today, all having to do with recreational fields. Okay.
And some of these have not been distributed before now, is that right?
The ones today are no, those have not been. We have been talking. Some of the amendments I'm presenting today are the result of some of the conversations I've had with community members that they were people pointed out some things that we needed to quickly fix. So, but no, today's memo has not been distributed. Everything up through yesterday has been distributed and posted on the website. Okay. So let me start with the three items that you asked for clarification about. The first was responding to some testimony that highlighted the concern that our recreational fields requirements would also apply to colleges. And what we've come back with is some amendment to clarify, to make it very clear, no, colleges are not affected by the changes we're made. So we've just sharpened that distinction in the code with some clarifying language. And we appreciate that that's been brought to our attention, and it's now very clear. That wasn't our intent, and we'll show you the language for that. The second item came up regarding grade level changes. And so I want to explain the clarification we're offering, but we also understand that's not something you'll be talking about today. The question came up about what happens if a school leaves the site is vacant, and then a new school comes in at a different grade level, how would that be treated? And you were right in finding. So you don't need to even answer.
Well,
no.
Okay.
We're just dealing with 600.
All right, so I'll bring that back when we're back to talk about schools. It was part of that package.
And that'll be posted on the website so that people who want to find out about it can find out what the issue is and what you're proposing.
Yes. But we'll bring it as part of the larger package. Okay, so the third question came up about how we would treat running tracks or skate parks. We had a lot of discussion about that. And what we're proposing is that we continue to not subject those to the requirements that we've presented, because the real issue that we've been trying to address is spectators. And what we've found is that those uses generally don't attract spectators in the same way that ball fields do. And because we've been focusing on how do we regulate the intensity based on spectators that are attracted to the use, we found that there haven't been any complaints that we're aware of regarding running fields. They don't typically attract spectators. When they do, it's because they're part of a larger recreational field. Generally, there's a field, often there's a field inside of the track that has some bleachers, and that use may attract spectators, but the running track itself does not. So we're proposing to continue to not address that through the new conditional use review that we're proposing for you. Do you want to add to anything that I've just said? Okay, so those are the three things you've asked about. I now want to, has this been passed out? We now have this new memo, and I want to run through this because these are the consolidation of all the amendments that you've already seen and a couple of new ones, and I can explain what these are. And again, these address staff proposed amendments. So the first revision that we're proposing is something you've already seen in the April 6th memo. This was just a clarification about when a new field is measured from the effective date of the ordinance. And this was just a simple clarification. It doesn't change any content of the proposals, but this was something I think at the advice of city attorney's office that we clarify that. So that's some language, again, you've already seen in the April 6th memo, and the public has seen this already. The second is something that is also came up in the April 6th memo, and this was clarifying that a field permitting organization may not be Parks and Recreation. It might be one of our other school districts. So this was just a clarification of that. And again, this is something people have already seen. Third revision is related, again, also from the April 6th memo, and the responsibility of the field permitting organization may or may not be Parks and Recreation. Again, it might be one of our other school districts, and they'd be responsible for sending the public notice. The fourth I want to call your attention to, this is something where we had made an adjustment in the April 21st memo, but today, this is right. Today we're making a further amendment based on some conversations that we've had today. This change clarifies what authority the director of Portland Parks and Recreation or other field permitting organization has with respect to a good neighbor agreement. The previous language specified that that agreements, and I'm sorry, this is still a little new to me, so I'm because we've just did this morning. Previously, we said good neighbor agreements shall adhere to the GNA policy adopted by Parks and Recreation. And what we didn't take into account is if another school district, if, say, David Douglas, Centennial, Park Rose, Reynolds were instead the field permitting organization, we want to specify that they may negotiate, execute, and administer the GNA according to their own internal process. So in other words, we don't want to have Parks and Recreation insinuated into a process and be a party to that agreement if the agreement really is between neighbors, the field users, and David Douglas, for example. So that's what this clarification now states. The fifth revision is to address the recreational fields at colleges, and just to clarify, it does not apply to colleges. And there are a couple of amendments that are tied to that clarification. And so, yeah, as you can see, there are a number of things that are all linked to that. The sixth revision is something that we needed to do. By separating out schools-related amendments from the park recreational fields, we needed to do a little bit of clarification here so that we could clearly decouple the two from the code and not have them be interrelated. So it's a procedural thing just to be able to separate out schools and still be able to adopt all the recreational fields amendments intact. And then the seventh and final revision we're proposing today is just to replace all the directives in the ordinance so that these directives now reflect this blue document plus this set of amendments, and that would be what we're proposing that you adopt today. And I appreciate that that may have been a little confusing, so I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
I have some questions. So what discussions have you had with Reynolds, David Douglas, Centennial, and Park Rose?
We've been in consultation with those school districts all through this process. I personally delivered, before we published the March 18th draft, I personally delivered a copy of the still draft to each of the school superintendents. We then got in contact with them by email and by phone call to clarify the field permitting organization language to make sure they understood that they were being included in this. So they've been consulted along the way, both about the original schools, but also the recreational fields amendments.
So would a new field in the David Douglas School District, for example, which is wholly within Portland, would that currently require a conditional use review under the City of Portland?
A new field?
Yes.
Well, correct. Under the proposed ordinance?
Under the current code.
Under the current code, yes. If you had a new field in any of the school districts within the city boundaries, would trigger a CU.
And what your proposed amendment says is that a new field under the proposal would not require a conditional use at all. It would go to the, if it was near an old field, it would go to the good neighbor agreement.
If it met all of, there are a number of
right.
standards that it would have to meet to do that, yes.
But the amendment you just gave us says that the field permitting organization may do its own good neighbor agreement process.
They still would comply with the code would apply to all properties within the city of Portland.
Do they have good neighbor processes in those school districts? Because the code in Title 20, is going to require a good neighbor agreement. So do they have good neighbor agreement processes? And if so, could we see them?
This gives them the choice so that they could do one on their own. They could adopt one of their own good neighbor agreements, or they could piggyback on the one that we've outlined for Portland Parks.
Right. So we're proposing the template for the agreement, and that would be what we'd be presenting to all school districts and field permitting organizations that operate in the city. What we're proposing now is to take out the role of the director of parks, though, from being a party to that agreement, but they still could use the same template for the agreement. The structure of the agreement itself would work for any school district.
Okay. And then on page 4 of 7, you're taking out hospitals. What is the relevance of taking out hospitals from the 120?
Do you want to explain that?
Oh. Sorry, it's really just a clarification. The Sean Wood with Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. The medical center use category includes hospitals, so it was just kind of redundant to have that in there. It doesn't have too much to do with the actual rec fields, but it was just a cleanup opportunity.
Well, okay, I'd like to see what the definition of medical center and the definition of hospital is in order to know whether this, in fact, does make a substantive change. I'm concerned that in a number of places throughout this so-called this recreational fields, there's been some cleanup which may or may not affect the outcomes. So that's good to know that was the intent. Thank you.
So I have a question. Brett, have you had a chance to look at revisions 1 through 7?
Just now I have, yes.
Okay, well, I'm reviewing this and then reviewing the earlier materials we got, which addressed a number of these, it does not appear that these make substantive changes, but these are intended to address issues that came up in our last hearing and provide some clarification. But it doesn't look to me like any of these make any substantive change in what you're proposing. Thank you. Mayor, is it... would it be your preference for us to move any amendment, to seek to move amendments so we have a comprehensive package before we take testimony later?
I think that would be useful if it's okay with our colleagues.
I would, if that's okay with you, I would move revisions 1 through 7 so that we have them before us.
Sorry. It's been moved and seconded that we support revisions 1 through 7. Is there a discussion?
I'm very uncomfortable without having had time to look at them.
Okay. If there's no other discussion, Carla, would you please call the vote?
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
The public hasn't had a chance to look at them either. No.
Adams?
Aye. The amendment is approved and is the basis of our further discussion.
So I have a series of amendments I'd like to move.
Okay.
And you have a handout with titled, yes, AF amendments to 428. 10, I
guess.
And then I just finished these about 1 o'clock this morning. They were posted on my website at that point. So again, it's not had very much public discussion. I am concerned about spectator seating, knowing that many fields don't provide any spectator seating, yet the proposed trigger for conditional use is whether bleachers are going to be added. So I move that we add, in addition to 210 lineal feet, events that have more than 70 spectators.
And, okay, that's been a motion. Is there a second? Can I ask a question before I consider a second?
Yeah, the mayor, you can do what you want.
I wish that were true. Where did 70 come from?
Because the staff said that 210 lineal feet equated to 70 spectators, we each being about 3 feet wide, apparently. So that was how they figured out the bleacher length. But if you think of soccer, for example, all the soccer games that I've been to, the parents have been sitting in deck chairs along the touchline. So you could have a significant number of people arriving for a game and needing parking, and yet under the proposed Good Neighbor Agreement process, there would be no requirement for a conditional use review.
If I could also just ask a clarifying question. My understanding, Commissioner Fritz, is that the unanimous Planning Commission recommendation that's before us did not include a recommendation that we go to spectator counts.
That's correct, Commissioner Fish, and the reason for that is because that there are, we don't count it every game, although many high school games you do sell tickets and therefore you count. What happens, though, if you have a standard in the code, and your approach, as I understand it, is to go to standards, if there's a standard of 70 spectators and you end up with 200 at every game, then that's clearly something that neighbors could say the standard has been exceeded, and as with many of our code provisions, there could be a complaint-driven process.
And, Mayor, just so I can put a marker down, I've had a chance to have some discussions with Commissioner Fritz, who, as you know, I have high regard in this area, and one of the things I'm going to propose later is that parks return to council within a year with a comprehensive report of our experience under whatever code changes the council adopts. And if based on that body of information, the council wants to do further refinements, we have some empirical basis to do so.
And if I could ask a clarifying question, another one, is this intended to be preventative, or are there locales in the city that this has been a problem and we're dealing with an actual problem?
We're changing from conditional uses being required in many situations to requiring them in hardly any situations. So this is a standard in the code that is a trigger for when we require it. So if we're envisioning that there's going to be a lot of spectators, then we should have a conditional use so that we can work out parking noise and other issues.
Do you know if this is a problem in the city somewhere besides Grant?
We don't. We have currently permitted all of our uses under conditional uses, so we've already figured out where the parking is.
Well, also, Mayor, another
fair enough. But is there, knowing that that is also true, is there an issue? Is this addressing an issue, a real problem, or the possibility of this becoming a problem?
Yes, because when you have a new field, and my next amendment is to say that all new fields should go through a conditional use, there's a discussion with the neighborhood about things like parking and noise, and it is particularly parking and noise that are of concern to neighbors and the frequency of events. So,
and what about, again, I'm just trying to understand this, Kenton Park, we have a very modest but lovely music in the park annual event, has more than 70 people attending. Is that
it's not subject to this because these are recreational fields for organized sports, so it doesn't count practices as well as it doesn't count musical events.
If I could just also clarify, Mayor, if it is a new field in a park that does not have a field, or if it involves permanent seating, this is the Grant Park experience, lighting and the like, the current proposal before us would require conditional use.
So unless I hear a second to the first, we'll move to the second proposed amendment from Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you, Mayor. The new recreational fields and not allowing the exception for adding an additional one. If you're adding an additional field, you are hoping to attract more use to that site, and therefore you should have to look at what the parking is, what the impacts are, how many events are going to be happening on a weekly, monthly, yearly basis so that you can figure out how to manage the impacts to the neighbors.
Okay, it's been moved. Is there a second?
So moving on, the accessory structures, such as bleachers, must be set back at least 30 feet from our zone sites. I'm suggesting, but the dugouts, concessions, and restrooms only have to be set back 15 feet from adjacent our zone sites. I do not think that 15 feet is enough of a setback for things that are going to attract activity like concession stands and restrooms in particular, which may be noxious. And doesn't limit how many restrooms you could have 15 feet from a homeowner's property line. I think there should be a greater setback, and so I'm proposing 30 feet.
For the sake of discussion, I'll second.
Thank you.
So why does it make sense to allow unlimited bathrooms within 15 feet of a lot line?
So just for clarification purposes, the current code does allow this. We're not loosening the standard in any way. In fact, we're tightening up a little bit by increasing the setback. I believe the setback, and Douglas, you can let me know if I'm wrong, is 10 feet for 15 feet. We're increasing it to 30 feet for bleachers and to 15 feet for structures. So we see this as sort of a net gain from a neighborhood perspective rather than any kind of a negative.
So again, this is trading standards for conditional use review, where there's a discussion of is 15 feet too close, or could you please move it 30 feet, or could you put it on the other side of the field where there aren't any residences so close. So because we're no longer going to have the conditional use review, I think the standard ought to be more like what I would want next to my home.
And if I could just comment on that, Douglas Hardy with BDS. Under today's code, as Brett indicated, for restrooms, that type of building, 15 feet is the minimum setback. We have in a BDS experienced, number one, complaints from neighbors about those particular facilities being too near residences. So that was one reason, I think, why the 15-foot was kept. In terms of the conditional use requirement under today's code for a restroom, only if that building was more than that restroom building was more than 1,500 square feet would it trigger a conditional use. Under today's code, if it was a 700 square foot restroom, you could build that by right without going through a conditional use.
But the field itself would go through a conditional use.
If it's used for organized sports, yes.
All right. Any additional?
How do porta potties fit into that equation?
It would be the same.
1,500.
Yeah, I mean,
a pretty big porta potty.
Yeah, I mean, the zoning code really
string them together, you know.
Yeah, the zoning code doesn't really differentiate between something that's temporary and permanent. So,
we're going to lose only 32 square feet. So.
Is there additional council discussion? If not, Carla, would you all stay there? Can you please call the vote on the amendment?
Fish.
Nope.
Saltzman.
Nope.
Leonard.
No.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
I appreciate Commissioner Fritz raising this, and I understand the issue better. And if it becomes an issue, we will have to deal with it in our review of all these changes. No.
So I'm going to skip the next one since I already lost on the 70 spectators. The next one at the bottom of the page here is concerning the addition of a new field. It does change the potential real intensity of the use, and it should not be allowed outright. It should go through a conditional use so that we discuss the intensity and use of the area through noise, traffic, and parking. So I'm proposing to delete entirely 279-030A8.
Just a clarification, Mayor. I understand that the proposal before us would allow one new field added to a site where there is an existing field, correct?
It would also require neighborhood notification for that kind of proposal. So there is a process where the community can be involved in the decision making.
And if that new field added lighting, a sound system, or seating in excess of 210 square lineal feet, that would also trigger a CU.
So currently you can double the number of the amount of playing field without a conditional use permit. Is that right? I just want to make sure.
If you've got one existing new field, you can't add more than one.
And if it's located within a certain distance so that they're clustered.
Currently, if you propose a field anywhere in a park site, you have to go through a conditional use.
Sorry, I misunderstood the question.
And the reason to eliminate that provision, what's the reason?
It's to strike a better balance in the process that would be required to install a new field. It's a high hurdle to do a Type 3 land use process.
Oh, it's a Type 3?
Yeah.
Why is it a Type 3?
Well, I'm not entirely certain. I believe probably the code, the way it was written, they just didn't want to deal with various levels of improvement. They just said, okay, if you're doing any kind of that field improvement, it's a Type 3. And it was an easier way to write the code.
I would answer that. These things are very controversial, and lots of people care about them, and they want to get the noise and parking things figured out. I would be happy with a Type 2 rather than a Type 3.
I think it's also, to your point, though, to their panel, if in proposing a second field, there was a companion proposal to add dedicated parking and other things, that would trigger conditional use review. But we're talking about a situation where there's an existing well-established field, and it is the view of the Planning Commission that that not be subject to the same regulation as substantial improvements to existing fields, which are likely to substantially increase use and spectators.
Commissioner Fish, I think what you've just pointed out is a disincentive for new uses to provide adequate parking, because that would then trigger a conditional use review. So you can add a field without looking at the parking impacts. It would make more sense that adding the new field is the trigger rather than the parking. We actually would the parking to be taken care of.
On that point and throughout these, what I would say respectfully, because I again, generally defer to you on these issues, is that with the check of a good neighbor agreement with a clear good neighbor agreement, and frankly, one thing that I think we sometimes overlook, which is the political check, because a good neighbor agreement, for example, is subject to oversight by the director of the Bureau and by the commissioner in charge, and I think we have to have some confidence also in the political process to provide an additional check if there is some kind of unforeseen impact which greatly impacts the neighborhood. And I'm, at least for the purposes of the trial run, I'm comfortable exercising that authority, and I will not hesitate as the commissioner in charge to revisit any agreement if there are unanticipated impacts in a community that need to be reviewed.
Well, likewise, Commissioner, I greatly respect your position as the commissioner in charge of ONI with a lot of experience in good neighbor agreements on both sides. We have found it very frustrating to be able to enforce good neighbor agreements and have not found that the political influence of a commissioner calling up and saying, please do what you're supposed to do, has been particularly effective. So I'm more comfortable with the conditional use process in which neighbors can participate rather than relying on staff. But I realize we disagree.
And just so that I'm clear, the problem that the change is solving is what? The proposed change solves what problem?
Whose proposed change?
Sorry. The Bureau's proposed change of going from conditional use to good neighbor.
The Bureau, throughout this process, Mayor, has been trying to strike a balance between those areas which should be subject to regulation and conditional use and those which should not. And when they are not conditional use, they'd be otherwise subject to the good neighbor agreement and other checks. And this was my understanding from what I've reviewed in the record below, is that the Planning Commission believed that there is no substantial impact of adding an additional field, and that that should not be subject to a conditional use process. It would be my intention to come back within a year with empirical information about how this is played out, and if that does trigger problems, and we could revisit it. But the goal is to get some balance into the system and make some, lines.
Can I add just a point about the thinking behind this whole package of amendments? A lot of what we've been trying to do is think about balancing and very carefully respecting the issues and concerns and needs of adjacent and immediate neighbors, and looking at the growing recreational needs of a growing city, and trying to have a good balance there to make sure that we're accommodating the recreational needs of our full community, but also being respectful of the immediate neighbors.
All right. Is there a second on this?
Well, I would be comfortable if this were a Type 2 review, this amendment. So that's accepted as a friendly amendment.
Absolutely. Thank you.
And I've got a lot of things running through my noggin these days. Remind me again the difference between the Type 2 and the Type 3 as it applies here.
The difference is both in terms of time frame and the cost. The review procedures or the review criteria are the same for both. And I could look up the numbers really quickly, but it's a substantial time difference and cost difference.
So, well, plus Type 3s are appealable to council.
And the appeal body is different, correct.
What is it like? Something like $3,500 for the Type 2 and $16,000?
Yeah, it's okay. Roughly $3,600 for Type 2 and double that for Type 3.
And it's 8 weeks versus 15 weeks.
Yeah.
Thank you for that friendly amendment, because I should have clarified that in all of these amendments, I would be very happy with a type 2 instead of a type 3. And one of my concerns with the proposal is that it takes way longer than the current type 2. In your packet, you suggested that the average type 2 takes 56 days. The proposed good neighbor agreement takes 127 days to get to the point of starting the good neighbor process, and then we'll take time after that. So, yeah.
Well, the good neighbor timeline, that's a maximum. When we do our public notice, we may decide to immediately start a good neighbor agreement, which would cut down the time considerably. So I think either way, whether it's a conditional use or a good neighbor agreement, you're looking at a considerable investment of time and staff and an effort with the community to get something done. Where we're at is we feel like the type 3 has had a prohibitive effect on us trying to meet increased sports demand and for more fields, that we won't pursue a field because we know a type 3 is a lengthy, expensive, and usually a losing proposition for us. The good neighbor notice helps us get to the concerns immediately and work directly with the community on trying to resolve the issues.
And Brett, since the mayor...
I just want to make sure I'm clear.
It has been moved and seconded.
But the friendly amendment part, I thought the amendment was let's get rid of this completely. And then he said let's make it a type 2. I don't know how you make a type 2 out of something that you're getting rid of. So.
No, my amendment is to delete the language in 2004050 or wherever it occurs that says that adding one field is allowed. And just to delete that part, and because then it continues on to the standards for the new field, which are acceptable. So... it could be a separate amendment to say that then the process would be a type 2 rather than, would that be better?
I think it's cleaner, personally. But Catherine knows a lot more about land use, so.
So, Mayor.
I think what's unclear to me at the moment is what language you're actually considering based on what we have on your list of amendments.
Clarify.
And I think if you want the council to vote on this amendment, then we need to have some language that actually implements adding a type 2 procedure rather than simply voting on a concept at this point.
Because your point is that a type 2 is substantively different than deleting the section.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
And I would, so we need with time, could come back with an amendment with that language. I would rather not do it on the fly. But if there's interest in council for doing that, I'd be happy to work on it with staff.
Well, I want to ask a couple questions about that I don't think were pursued in distinguishing between a type 2 and a type 3. Type 2 is appealable to a hearings officer. Type 3 is appealable to council. Both are appealable to land use board. LUBA,
Appeals.
Land Use Board of Appeals, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So essentially what we'd be doing, and I want to make that clear to anybody that's considering this amendment, is going from a process where there is some certainty for a recreational field on the condition that there be a good neighbor agreement to a process, whether it's type 2 or type 3, that can be held up for years in appeals either via the hearings officer or via the council to the Land Use Board of Appeals, which can then be appealed to the Oregon Court of Appeals. Is that correct? The procedural steps?
Yes.
Okay. So it isn't really I don't think it was clear in your answers were on point to the questions asked, but I think we need to extrapolate fully the implication of going to a type 2 or type 3 hearing.
And have any conditional uses for recreational fields have been appealed that you can remember to LUBA?
I don't know
of any.
I wouldn't know without looking. I don't know.
Call the question. Can we can we vote, please?
What are we voting on, though?
Your amendment, which could not be friendly amended.
Let me withdraw that and try another one.
Okay.
If that's okay with you.
If I could just say, I'm going to wait. Go.
I move that a new field would be subject to a type two conditional use, and that staff would work out the language for that.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is this the same discussion that we had before?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Unless there's additional discussion, Carla, would you please call the roll on this proposed amendment?
Fish.
Once again, I greatly respect the maker of the motion and have a chance to discuss all of these points. I come down, though, I am going to oppose it for the following reason. I believe the Title 33 amendments, as recommended unanimously by the Planning Commission, strike an appropriate balance, requiring land use review for certain new uses which have substantial impact, and providing a different mechanism for others, and respectful throughout with the concerns of the surrounding neighborhood. This set of this proposal has been discussed for over a year. It's been subject to extensive public process, and I'm not comfortable changing the mix of the balance, because I think the Planning Commission deliberately came up with a balanced package when they presented it to us. And I also respectfully think this particular change runs contrary to the well-established intent of this council to move on aggressively on an agenda to provide our children with better recreational facilities, both existing fields and, where possible, companion fields. So I'm going to vote no.
Saltzman.
Well, I certainly appreciate Commissioner Fish's and the council support for more recreational fields. However, I do feel in this case a companion field, I think as Commissioner Fritz said earlier, there could be a disincentive to want to invest in the necessary infrastructure to really make that companion field fit in terms of parking and restrooms. And so that's why I feel it should be subject to a type 2 review. And I vote aye.
Leonard?
Well, I certainly agree that impacts that have an effect on neighborhoods in the city should be subject to a public process. But I think the recommendation forwarded to us by the Planning Commission and supported by the staff does that. I think it's important to remember that as Portland becomes increasingly dense, as a result of, and I always have to remind myself of this, of Oregon's unique land use system that was adopted early in the 70s, so that we preserve farmland and we preserve forested lands, and don't become a California-style state that has, as you drive down the freeway, small pockets of development here and there that end up affecting adversely the entire living environment for the entire state, versus Oregon that is very careful about how we use our land. Thus, we have, you know, we do have controversy about skinny houses in neighborhoods. I'm very familiar with that. And we have controversy about recreational fields. And I am along with other members of the council, familiar with that. But having said that, we have to be realistic to provide opportunities for families, for children to recreate in an increasingly dense city with some certainty, development with some certainty. So for that reason and only that reason, I do not support the motion. No.
Fritz.
Well, I'm very glad to hear my colleagues so affirmative of the Planning Commission's recommendation, and I hope that carries over to the school's discussion in a few weeks. This is about public process.
Touché. How'd that feel?
Really good.
That must have felt good.
You didn't
you're allowed,
get the vote on that.
I hope to strike that comment.
This is about public process. This is about predictable public process. This is about staff being paid for their time, which they are in a type 2 and they're not in a good neighbor agreement. It's about a familiar system of land use decisions, and it's about discretionary decisions. And when you have a new site, there are going to be discretionary decisions about parking and noise and other neighborhood impacts which properly belong in the zoning code and in the land use review process. So I urge the mayor, who has the swing vote, to vote aye.
Adams.
To ruminate just a little bit, I live, as we're having this discussion, I live about 50 feet from a softball baseball diamond that's used regularly, Kenton Park. I'm the last row of houses in my section of North Portland before it's industrial and then PIR. And so this sort of use, there's land use and then there's use of the land. And I'm making the distinction between the two with this vote. I agree that we need to, where sports facilities already exist, and in this case, I know we're not talking parks. I think that the addition or new ones coming in as part of a good neighbor agreement, I'm willing to try that for a year and see how that goes. Yes. So with that, so I'm going to vote no.
Okay, moving on. Before I move on to my other amendments, which are in Title 20, I just have a couple of questions for staff on parking. This is in Title 33, for instance, on page 31. In making some minor amendments and putting parking in a separate area, you've taken parking areas out as conditional uses in cemeteries and golf courses. And I'm wondering if there was any discussion about the Planning Commission at the Planning Commission about the implications of that.
So, and I'm sorry, you were looking where?
Page 31 of the blue covered document. So in 120-100. In B, which is cemeteries, and D, C, in golf courses.
Right. So the basically it was just to consolidate that in 7E, it does say parking areas.
Right.
So parking areas still would be regulated as a conditional use.
You're comfortable that it's clear that parking in cemeteries and golf courses are still regulated?
Yeah, because these are all-inclusive. So as you read down the list, if something's on that list, so if parking area is identified, that by itself would trigger
okay.
conditional use, regardless of the use.
A second question I have is that there are differences between the parking regulations as far as how many spaces may be added and taken away in this process than there were in the Recap 5 process, which went into effect on Sunday. So I wondered if you could tell me why you changed the parking regulations again from what we discussed in Recap 5 and what the differences are.
Yeah. And I understood they were the same as what's in Recap 5.
I thought they were the same.
I think they've been made consistent.
They're intended to be the same as what's in Recap 5.
So if I was to find some differences, you could make the changes as a friendly change?
Sean Wood, BPS. The intent is to make them the same, so they'd be the same in both 33279, the rec fields chapter, 33281, schools and school sites, and then also in 815, the conditional use chapter. We did clarify some of the language because what was under Recap 5 was a little confusing, but we've made all three of those places parallel with this effort.
And your intent was to make the same number of added and taken away spaces the same trigger.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you. We can check on that later before the vote next week. Moving to Title 20, this is the mechanics of the Good Neighbor Agreement, which is now going to substitute for the conditional use process. So it's really important that we get the timelines correct and that we make sure that the correct people are invited to participate in the Good Neighbor Agreement. So the you have before you the amendments in 2004050C, which are underlined. The current language says that a public meeting can be held. My amendment says it must be held if requested by a neighborhood association. And I'm adding that that the neighbors who are adjacent to the site, either 10 homes or 50% of the homes, whichever is less, should also have the right to ask for the good neighborhood agreement because they're currently with a conditional use. Anybody can participate. You don't have to have the affirmation of the neighborhood association in order to participate in a discussion. So I don't know how you want me to do this in terms of making these amendments all at once or one at a time. Or
there's a question,
yes.
Mr. Fritz, on what you've just identified. From what did you draw that standard?
I pulled it out of thin air because I was trying to pull things together at the last minute. So I was trying to think of the conditional use sites that I know of where there are fields to try to what I was trying to do was to establish that a certain number of residents, that it couldn't be one resident who could trigger this whole good neighbor agreement, which, as I say, I think is overly involved and time-consuming. But if you've got, for instance, in the recent Grant Park discussion, if you've got 10 homeowners who are concerned, then that would, or 50%, whichever is less. If you've got a site with only a couple of homes on, if one of those is sufficiently concerned, I think they should have the right to ask for the good neighbor agreement. Because otherwise you're completely taking away individual neighbors' authority to be able to participate in this system where currently they have a Type 3 that can be appealed to council and can be appealed to LUBA by a single person.
Can I ask staff to just comment on that proposal?
So the reason it reads can be held is that there's a possibility that when we do the noticing and we respond to neighbors, We may at that point just decide to enter a good and start a good neighbor agreement, which would make the meeting unnecessary. I think we could reword it to where it would be required if we haven't made a decision to enter into a good neighbor agreement already.
Okay.
That would help.
That's fine.
Regarding the 10 homes and the 50% of the homes within 50 feet, we did consider that when we were drafting this, and we felt that that there could be a considerable number of people within 400 feet of a subject site, and that we had covered, we had captured enough people by with the notice going out to everybody within 400 feet. So we didn't feel like we needed to specify a percentage or a minimum number of residents.
But what you're doing is pitting individual neighbors against their neighborhood association who may not share their opinion. So if the neighborhood, what this requires is for the neighborhood association to be the gatekeeper, that individual residents adjacent to the park, if the board of the neighborhood association doesn't happen to share their opinion, they can't get a good neighbor agreement. Surely that wasn't your intent.
I think that there could be, first of all, there could be several neighborhood associations within a particular site, so it would offer some options. There could be multiple requests for a good neighbor agreement. I also believe that if we felt like the demand from the neighbors was considerable, we would just honor that request and we would enter into a good neighbor agreement. We wouldn't wait for the neighborhood association to issue a letter. It's just we would feel responsive to get back to the neighborhoods that had the concern.
So at this point, though, it feels like you're deciding whether there should even be a process. And that, again, goes from a Type 3 appealable through the Court of Appeals, as Commissioner Leonard has said, to a parks get to decide whether people can even have a good neighbor discussion.
Well, I think the way we've worded it is there gets to be some dialogue with the community on what is acceptable, that we don't just go in and build a field, that there's this notice and there's this process that starts up when a proposal comes in. So there's some, we felt like we were putting the neighborhood more on par and giving them a bigger seat at the table than they might not get through a conditional use process.
The balance of, maybe I have a different sort of point of balance than, but I want to ask Commissioner Fritz this sort of sense of balance there. You know, I live near these other public uses. I moved there knowing I was going to live by PIR and I was going to live by Saturday and Sunday softball games. So I knew the uses I was moving next to. I want to be consulted in their operations, but I don't know that I should get a veto just because I happen to live near them. So this isn't quite on point, but how are you striking the balance? How do you seek to strike the balance?
The neighborhood now has no veto at all. The neighbors now have no veto at all. What I'm asking is that they would get to participate in the discussion, and there's no requirement for there to be a discussion.
And since, you know, it's if they can't muster support in their neighborhood association, does that, I mean, reinforcing the neighborhood association as the place that everyone goes to decide, you know, to present their concerns, and then the neighborhood deciding whether or not it's going to rise to the level where it's urgent enough and compelling enough to rise to the level of a neighbor concern, as opposed to simply because you live by one of these public facilities, you know, you get to trigger. How are you seeking to strike the balance?
I'm trying to get as close as possible to the current conditional use process, which we're now doing away with, where one person can take it all the way up to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. In this process, there isn't enough standing for the neighbors who are the most impacted. Neighborhood associations, and I greatly appreciate your hope that people would go through the neighborhood association and be able to persuade, they are participatory democracy and they have different bylaws as to who can be on the board and how decisions are made. Not all of them are made by a show of hands at a particular meeting, and when they are, they can often be swayed by people coming to a meeting and never showing up again. So I like that neighborhood associations are recognized as an entity that can call for a public meeting. It shouldn't require that the most impacted neighbors have to persuade their neighborhood association who are not democratically elected or appointed by the city of Portland.
So Commissioner Fish, would you be open to as you sort of embark on this voyage of continued discovery and innovation in trying to get more active use of more land within each of the neighborhoods, I assume that if this passes, that you'll have to set up some further administrative sort of protocols of how this would actually happen for your bureau.
Mayor, in the remaining months of my service on this council, I'll of course honor whatever the directive is. But I will say that to me, as I've gotten more involved in this, one thing that I am concerned about is I think there is an underlying tone of a lack of trust that I think is primarily directed, frankly, to the school district, but has sort of ricocheted off and hit my bureau. And the reason I'm concerned about that is that I am guilty of many things. I have many shortcomings, and I think I have a wife and two children to remind me of that on a regular basis. But I don't remember a specific example in the last year where we have done something contrary to a significant neighborhood concern. I would cite to the example of Sunnyside Park, which was a process that at a certain point got very contentious, and this commissioner actually went and sat with the community, all the stakeholders, brokered the meetings, weighed in, and personally got engaged in reaching a compromise. I'm reminded on Grant Park that after a consensus emerged around a scaled-back version, when we had a public hearing on that, and I called a public hearing so no one could criticize us for not going the extra mile, What I experienced was an overwhelming community sentiment about replacing a field and one person testifying against it. So it is a question of the balance. And I want to make sure we're addressing real problems, not imagined problems. And I also respectfully would like the opportunity as the commissioner in charge to work with my team to make this function. And if there's problems, fine-tune it. But I bristle a little bit at the notion that there's such a breach that we can't be trusted to carry out this proposal, which has been unanimously recommended by the Planning Commission. So I will follow whatever directive my colleagues want, but I think I have more confidence that we can get this thing right in a collaborative way. And I would urge someone to cite an example where we have run roughshod over the concerns of any neighborhood group vis-a-vis our parks and during my service.
That's a really good point. And in fact, given that example with Grant Park, we might want to change it to the nearby residents and the neighborhood association rather than or the neighborhood association. Because in that particular case, there was the neighborhood association who wanted to continue the discussion.
I can only imagine how well you will take that idea.
I will be guided by the majority will. I am truly committed to making this thing work.
But I would like to pick up on what that you said.
Can I just finish my thought?
Oh, I'm sorry, Jen.
I want to make very clear that I have utmost confidence in you and your staff, Commissioner Fish, and what I'm looking at is an established process with a land use review that has been going on as long as I've been involved and is not dependent on the commissioner in charge. I want to make sure that whatever is adopted here is not dependent on the commissioner in charge.
And I would ask that the commissioner in charge, I think, has done a fantastic job of moving some of these issues along to resolution that have been stuck, that all I ask is, and I don't think I need to amend anything just as a matter of legislative intent, that you come up with a uniform approach. The uniform rules of engagement whether someone surrounding a facility versus someone else who uses the facility but isn't even in the neighborhood wants something, all I'd ask is for yourself as you move forward and your bureau to come up with some sort of uniform sort of administrative guide to that. I don't think it needs to be enshrined in an amendment.
We certainly commit to that, and we will go one step further and consult with Commissioner Fritz as we develop it.
Okay. So did you there was no second for that.
So my last amendment, actually I don't have a specific amendment on this, but I'd like you to consider as you move forward, Commissioner Fish, that there needs to be more enforcement than revoking a field permit, because some of the untoward activities could be unrelated to the particular field permit. And the Planning Commission supported the good neighbor approach only if enforcement measures mechanisms are improved or approved. And that's been the problem that we've had with good neighbor agreements in all of the ones that I've been involved in, is the lack of enforcement mechanisms.
We will, as part of our reporting back to the council, we will track any complaint we receive that seeks to revoke a field permit for any reason, and we will document and track that so we have some data.
Yeah, but the problem is when it's not related to a field permit, what else could we do that might be used for enforcement?
Good.
I want to just highlight, I know that we're not adopting the draft policy, that you're continuing to work on that. So as you do that, I want to put my concerns on the record. It doesn't specify how the 5 to 15 neighborhood representatives are selected, and there may be more than 15 that want to participate. I'm questioning why a good neighbor agreement would expire with a sunset date, wondering what the mechanism will be for the proposed annual review, and I look forward to seeing that in a year. And the other questions have been answered by staff. Thank you.
All right. Unless there's additional council discussion with this esteemed panel of experts, we will move to testimony. Thank you.
We have five people who signed up for the amendments. The first three, please come on up, are Dave Johnston, Dixie Johnston, and Paul Cathcart.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to City Council. Glad you're here. You don't have any. Would you like to begin?
Thank you. Good afternoon to the City Council and the staff. I want to thank the council and all of the staff for working with us on our concern about clarifying the code with respect to whether the field rules, as they're proposed, should apply to colleges or not. And as I look at today's memo from Deborah Stein and their item number 5, it looks like they've done a good job of answering our concerns. Hopefully our concerns have been helpful in getting a better city code. So thank you to all concerned.
If I could say, sir, since I had the privilege of chairing last week, I think the mayor was ill, I want to thank you, both of you, and the others who came, who testified on that point, caused us to go back, look at the language, and I think this is the way it's supposed to work, and staff came forward. So we appreciate your time in bringing this to our attention.
Well, thank you.
Ms. Johnston. I'm Dixie Johnston, co-land use chair of Collinsview, and I do want to reiterate that we appreciate the staff and all their hard work. Kudos to them. They were very kind and very patient to us, and we appreciate their listening to our concerns. They've done a good job. I do want to remind you all again, I did attend all the Planning Commission hearings, or I recorded them so I could watch all of them concerning both the schools and the parks issues. One thing that came out over and over again was that good neighbor agreements are not enforceable, and a lot of the folks commenting about field use were very concerned about that. Going to citywide land use meetings for a number of years, this was also reiterated. Even though good neighbor agreements sound good on paper and everybody smiles and shake hands, sometimes people get a little bit lazy or a little bit sloppy over a period of time, or you'll get a rah-rah enthusiastic soccer team or little league team or something coming in, and, you know, they don't want to follow the rules exactly because they're so enthusiastic about, yay, we're here for the kids. And sometimes the good neighbor's agreement get in the way. And I hate to see things devolve into a little bit of anarchy here. There is that possibility. Commissioner Fritz, you Fish, you did have a good idea in 1 year revisiting this program because I think it would really be helpful. I have to confess, I do lean towards Commissioner Fritz, though, in the conditional use end of things. Yeah, it's a nuisance. It's heavy cost up front. However, when conditional uses have been through that process is over and done with, the hearing officer makes a decision. These are the rules. If someone comes back a year or two later and decides to be a little lackadaisical, maybe try to pull something on the neighbors, or maybe they hurt some of the athletic teams who are trying to use the field or anything else, somebody can say, wait a minute, we have conditional use here. Here are the rules. And usually they'll back up a little bit. They don't change the rules willy-nilly just because there's a new director or a new trustee or whatever is going on. So I think there is more security and stability for the neighborhood, for all the fields with the conditional use. But we could give this a try, but I think it should deserves some watching. I am concerned about infrastructure issues with one new field. What if there's only one driveway going in and out? It may not be enough. Traffic could back up. There's a lot of issues here. I hope the Good Neighbor Agreement would address those.
I want to just say I very much appreciate your comments and the spirit in which they're offered. When we do our one-year review, we'd like to have you there. And I don't mean to say this, I don't intend this to be flip, but I will tell you that the greatest obstacle to having an additional field built out is not whatever regulatory system we set up or whatever review system. It's a cost factor.